Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Healthcare professionals Kamran Idris, Natalie Lockney, and Milad Baradaran, all from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, spoke about the potential benefits of intraoperative radiotherapy, known as IORT, as a treatment strategy for patients with pancreatic cancer. The group detailed the modality's history, technical properties, and suitable conditions for use in this patient population, and they demonstrated the potential application of IORT based on a particular patient case at their institution.
So the goal for cancer surgery is to remove all the cancer, that is to achieve a negative margin to offer a chance for cure. In most cases, we're able to achieve negative margins or R0 resection. However, there are instances in which we are not able to achieve negative margins because of either it's not technically feasible based on either the location of the tumor or involvement of key anatomical structures, or sometimes the morbidity of the more radical surgery to achieve negative margins. This will result in macroscopic or macroscopic resection, or in other words, positive resection margins. There have been several studies done across multiple cancers, including prostate, pancreas cancer, head and neck cancer, colorectal, that has utilized large national databases looking at margin positivity over a span of several years, such as greater than 10 years. And it has shown consistently that the positive margin rates have not improved. So why are positive surgical margins important? It results in increased rate of local recurrence, increased cost of care, as well as treatment intensification, and all of that results in decreased overall survival. To address this issue of positive margins is where the role of intraoperative radiation therapy comes in.
Intraoperative radiation therapy, or IORT for short, is a form of radiation that is delivered intraoperatively as a one-time dose. So after the surgeon resects the tumor, the surgeon and radiation oncologist identify the area at risk for the positive margin and insert an applicator into the tumor bed to deliver the radiation therapy. The key benefits of delivering IORT while in the operating room are, one, the surgeon and radiation oncologist can together visualize the area at risk in real time, and two, critical nearby structures such as the small bowel, stomach, et cetera, can be manually retracted away from the radiotherapy field to safely allow delivery of higher doses of radiation therapy than possible in standard external beam radiation approaches. Another additional advantage is patient convenience because the radiation is delivered while they're under anesthesia, which can be helpful, particularly for patients who may live long distances from a radiation center.
What tumors would benefit from intraoperative radiation therapy?
Intraoperative radiation therapy has been used for many different cancer types. So today we're focusing on pancreatic cancer. However, it's also commonly used for rectal cancer, also in some sarcoma, as well as head and neck and gynecological malignancies.
IORT has had a long history in cancer management. The practice of IORT in the United States was started in the late 1970s by Dr. Goldson at Howard University. Back then, the majority of cancer centers used their stationary conventional linear accelerators, or LINAC, to perform IORT. In that case, the anesthetized patient should be moved from OR to the radiation oncology department accompanied by OR personnel to receive treatment. This is technically very difficult and relatively inefficient. Later on, the idea of using a mobile LINAC inside an existing OR room makes the cost and logistics of setting up an IORT program much easier. So therefore, there has been a recent resurgence of interest in IORT. One of the manufacturers of mobile LINACs is Intraop Medical with manufacturers Mobitron. Mobitron is a kind of linear accelerator that can generate electrons up to 12 MeV, and it can deliver precise, highly concentrated dose to the target while at the same time sparing normal neighboring tissues. And that is the goal of radiation therapy. Although there are many similarities between IRT treatments via stationary units and mobile units, several important considerations are unique to mobile units. Mobitron has applicators with a wide variety of sizes from 3 cm to 10 cm diameter. It can even be 8 by 20 cm rectangular. This will help us to confine the beam to the volume of interest within the surgical area. A treatment can be performed under sterile conditions with the patient anesthetized, and it can be delivered in a large single fraction. We can also use beam modifiers. We can place bolus at the end of the applicator. This will help us to increase target surface dose, and at the same time, we can decrease penetration depths of the electrons. It helps us to spare normal tissue sitting underneath the target. A Mobitron can generate electrons with energies of 6, 9, 12 MeV, which allow target coverage to a distal depth of about 4 cm. It has a nominal dose rate of 100, sorry, it has a nominal dose rate of 1,000 monitor unit per minute. Then the beam on treatment delivery will require only few minutes per treatment. Moreover, we can have a wide range of motions of the treatment head, which will let us have more flexibility in setting up the patient. Very user-friendly software for treatment planning purposes called preload that we can use to do those calculations as prescribed by our radiation oncologist intraoperatively. On the other hand, we have some limitations working with mobile LINACs, like concerns of storage, transport, treatment setup, and radiation protection. We are always asked by our personnel, is it safe to stay in the same room with Mobitron? And the answer is absolutely yes. Remember, a LINAC doesn't generate any radiation when it is off. There remain concerns associated with radiation protection when the beam is on during actual treatment delivery or during treatment day quality assurance. These units are self-shielded. They have beam stoppers, and they are designed primarily for use in an unshielded area. But exposure limits typically restrict their use to the treatment of a small number of patients per week, plus the required daily QA and warm-up. At the end, I have to say that based on our experience at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, clear communications among the surgeon, radiation oncologist, and physicists are key for proper patient positioning and successful and efficient treatment delivery.
Historically, the management of pancreatic cancer, as long as the tumor is resectable, has revolved around surgery. Now, we know that even if the surgery is performed and the pancreatic tumor is completely resected, most of the patients will recur within the first 2 years, either locally or to distant organs such as liver and lung. Now, what that tells us that surgery is necessary to offer a chance for cure for these patients with pancreatic cancer, but it's not sufficient. And hence, the treatment of pancreatic cancer has shifted towards a multimodal therapy. Now, the goal for a surgeon is to select the right patient, making sure the patient is strong enough to undergo surgery, does not have prohibitive medical conditions, and there's no actual cutoff in terms of age to perform pancreatic surgery. The second goal for the surgeon is to do the right operation and achieve negative margins and to minimize or eliminate any complications so that the patients can move on to the next stage of the treatment, which is chemotherapy. Now, when I evaluate a patient with pancreatic cancer, usually I will put them in three big buckets. The first group, unfortunately, is the patients who will present with metastatic cancer at the time of diagnosis. And unfortunately, the treatment for those patients is going to be systemic chemotherapy and not surgery or radiation. The next bucket is either resectable or the third bucket, which is called borderline resectable or locally advanced. Now, that determines the operability or resectability of these pancreatic cancer tumors. which we make on cross-sectional imaging. And the imaging modality that is usually utilized, at least at our institution, is a triple-phase CT scan. Here you can see the pancreas is what I will call it, is located in a high-priced real estate. There are key structures such as the blood vessels to majority of our small intestine and large intestine, as well as key blood vessels that supply organs such as liver, which makes the determination for resectability. Now, if any of these vessels are involved, we will categorize them as either borderline resectable or locally advanced tumors based on the involvement of the veins or arteries. If none of these vessels are involved, those are resectable tumors. If the patients have resectable disease, usually they can undergo surgery followed by chemotherapy or chemotherapy followed by surgery. Now, for those patients who are in the borderline resectable or locally advanced bucket, the standard treatment is to start with systemic chemotherapy, followed by radiation therapy if needed, followed by surgery, and plus minus intraoperative radiation therapy.
So as you heard from Dr. Idris, the real estate area in the pancreas is really critical to the treatment of the patient. While often complex surgeries and reconstructions may be required for the vessel anatomy, really the critical organs from a radiation oncologist perspectives are the nearby bowel, such as the duodenum, remainder of the small intestine, and the stomach. With pancreatic cancer, we have a difficult time getting sufficient radiation dose delivered to the tumor because of those critical dose-limiting structures. And we know conventional doses of external beam radiation in the range of 45 to 50 gray do not provide durable local control. There are a lot of studies looking at use of preoperative chemo radiation, postoperative chemo radiation, but also intraoperative radiation. As we heard earlier, the benefit of intraoperative radiation is that those critical structures are either removed by the surgeon or can be manually retracted away from the field. That can allow us to deliver the higher intraoperative radiation boost dose. So for R0 or tumors that are resected with a negative margin, our dose range for the IRT boost would typically range from 10 to 12.5 gray. For tumors that have a microscopic positive margin or R1 resection, the dose for the boost would typically be 12.5 to 15 gray. Now, for tumors that have gross residual disease that couldn't safely be resected, we may even escalate that IRT dose even further up to 20 gray. However, if the duodenum has not been resected and is still intact, then the dose may have to be lower. Therefore, patients who are unresectable, we may instead pursue a high-dose ablative external beam approach. To talk a little bit about the data for intraoperative radiation therapy, we know that for the past, really since the 1980s, there have been over 30 published retrospective articles talking about what's been found. So we know more contemporary data is available from Mayo Clinic and Mass General Hospital, where the local control after IRT have been reported to be in the range of 73 to 94%, with overall survival ranging from 23 to 35 months. And we look forward to the completion of an ongoing, single-arm phase two prospective trial. That's called the PACER trial. It's being run out of Massachusetts General Hospital, led by Dr. Ted Hogg. It's looking at delivering intraoperative radiation in pancreatic patients who have either borderline resectable or unresectable disease with an intraoperative radiation therapy boost following a standard preoperative radiation therapy. It's also important to note that we do have some guidelines available for the delivery of intraoperative radiation for pancreatic cancer. So ESTRO, which is the European Society for Radiation Therapy and Oncology, has an advisory committee for radiation oncology practice, and their task force did recently publish guidelines in 2020 recommending the use of IRT in certain settings for borderline resectable or unresectable pancreatic cancer. And so now I believe Dr. Idris wanted to show you through one of our recent patient cases.
Here's a patient that was evaluated here at the Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center in our multidisciplinary pancreas clinic. She's a 64-year-old female with biopsy-proven pancreatic cancer of the body and neck of the pancreas. And the cross-sectional imaging here shows the involvement of the celiac axis, the common hepatic artery, as well as its the splenic artery, along with the portal venous involvement. The patient, when we reviewed her case, we recommended that she should undergo neoadjuvant chemotherapy, and she received 12 cycles of modified FOLFIRINOX treatment, followed by a restaging CT scan of her chest, abdomen, and pelvis, which revealed no evidence of distant metastases, but still involvement of the key blood vessels. At that time, she was evaluated by Dr. Lockney, and our multidisciplinary pancreas clinic recommendation was that she should undergo concurrent chemoradiation therapy, and she underwent 50.4 gray 28 fractions of radiation with capecitabine. And subsequently, on subsequent follow-up imaging, she did not have any evidence of disease. And at that time, we recommended surgical resection with intraoperative radiation therapy. We took her to the operating room and performed a diagnostic laparoscopy to ensure that she did not have any evidence of distant metastases. And once we did not see any disease, we proceeded with what we are called a modified Applebee procedure, and she underwent a subtotal distal pancreatectomy with removal of her spleen and en bloc resection of her celiac axis and common hepatic artery. We also resected her portal vein where it was involved, which was primarily repaired. And then subsequently, she underwent an intraoperative radiation therapy where I partnered with Dr. Lockney and our radiation physicist team to perform radiation therapy to the tumor resection bed, celiac artery stump, as well as aorta.
In the operating room, we determined an area of risk of about 5 centimeters. So we chose a 6 centimeter applicator with a 0 degree bevel. And here you can see our prescription dose was 12.5 gray. We had a 5 millimeter bolus with a tissue depth of 1 centimeter. And so here at this curve, you can see that we're delivering our prescription dose in this range. But by the time we get to a depth of about 3 centimeters, we have dose fall off. So those underlying tissues, critical organs such as the spinal cord, we really expect to get a negligible dose.
So her final pathology revealed that she had a residual invasive tumor, which was 1 centimeter in size and in a largely fibrotic tissue bed. All her margins were negative, and her final pathological stage was YP T1C N0. All her 31 lymph nodes that we procured at the time of surgery did not have any evidence of involvement. She has been disease-free for 15 months. She did not receive any adjuvant therapy, and there's no evidence of recurrence at this point radiographically. Carefully selected patients in a multidisciplinary team approach, we can offer surgical resection with intraoperative radiation therapy in selected patients with pancreatic cancer. Now, it has to be a multidisciplinary team approach to carefully select these patients and who can benefit from this procedure. So, is this procedure for all patients with pancreatic cancer? Certainly not. It has to be carefully selected patients which are either borderline resectable or locally advanced who receive, for sure, systemic chemotherapy in a neoadjuvant fashion, followed by radiation therapy, and then considered to be surgical candidates.
Having a mobile linear accelerator to do priority for these patients can help us treat those patients in just one single fraction using high-energy electrons.
Dr. Lockney, my question for you is what if at the time of exploration in the operating room, I had determined that this tumor was potentially unresectable? What would have been the options for this particular patient at that time?
I think that's really a critical question. And I think that also really points to the, importance of having a discussion with a patient prior to surgery that this is a situation we may encounter. Because we're left with the patient under anesthesia and have to decide how to proceed. So in some scenarios, I would say, particularly if you discover previously unrecognized metastatic disease, such as peritoneal tumor deposits or liver metastases, then I think IORT have the potential for us to deliver some local palliative radiation for the tumor if the patient is symptomatic from their local tumor symptoms, such as a pain or impending gastric outlet obstruction. And then we can really allow that patient to have a one-time radiation delivery dose in the OR and spare them, the 1 to 2 weeks of palliative outpatient radiation they may otherwise receive. I think what's a little bit more difficult to answer is if the patient has localized unresectable disease, what is the best approach at that time? If the patient has already had a course of preoperative external beam radiation, then we still have the option to deliver an IORT boost so that we can try and get some durable local control. And because we know that local symptoms and local progression can contribute to death in these patients and also decrease performance status, ability to tolerate additional chemotherapy, et cetera. If it's a patient who has not yet had any prior external beam, then I would want to have the conversation with the patient beforehand that maybe in that setting we wouldn't deliver intraoperative radiation, but we may actually try and target for that particular patient, target the tumor with a high dose ablative external beam approach to try and deliver a high BED for local tumor control.
Dr. Lotney, in the cases that we have done found localized disease intraoperatively, but no evidence of metastatic disease, and gave them IORT, what do the surgical oncologists or surgeons need to know in terms of if the tumor or radiation is near the head of the pancreas, for example?
Particularly for those tumors in the head of the pancreas, we have to remember that the duodenum will still be in the radiation field as well as the common bile duct. And so we worry about toxicity to the duodenum as well as stricture risk to the bile duct. And so if 100% of the circumference of the duodenum is going to be in the radiation field for the IORT, we really need to reduce the dose. If we're going to have less than 50% of the duodenum in the field, and/or if there will be a gastroduodenal bypass performed by the surgeon, then we can still try and escalate the dose a bit with the intraoperative radiation. So really, having that conversation with the surgeon is key so that you can perform the appropriate bypassing.
And that's what we have done historically on those cases that we perform a sort of a prophylactic gastroduodenal bypass in case they develop subsequently duodenal stricture. I think what I really liked about the intraoperative radiation therapy was that the ability that, I was able to mobilize the stomach and colon and small intestine out of the way, and we were able to radiate the area of concern intraoperatively and had no sort of innocent bystander effect, which would have been the case if the patient had received postoperative radiation therapy.
I have a question for Dr. Varadaran. So, if we have a tumor that can't be resected, as Dr. Idris said, and we have an intact tumor, we really have to think about the maximum tumor death that we can treat with Mobitron. So, can you just comment on your thoughts from that when we look at those PDD curves together in the OR?
Absolutely. A Mobitron can generate electrons with energy of 6, 9, and 12 MeV. Rule of thumb, if you divide the energy by 4, it will give you depth of maximum dose for a PDD for electrons dose distribution. So, for example, we are treating a resected tumor and prescription dose is 1 cm. If we use 6 MeV electrons, divide 6 by 4, 1.5 cm. We can fully cover that resected region with almost 100% of the dose.
And so, if we were to say have to treat a intact tumor that's greater than 4 cm depth, then what would our coverage be? For example, if we have a deep tumor treating to a depth of 4.5, 5 cm.
If you have an intact tumor, using 12 MeV electrons, we can have 90% coverage, 90% of the volume, receiving 100% of the prescription dose, up to distal depths of 4 cm. So it doesn't mean that we cannot have more coverage at deeper depths. You'll have just less coverage. For example, we can treat by 80% of the isodose line.
Dr. Lockney, I have a question for you. If someone gets, for example, 6 months of neoadjuvant chemotherapy and we repeat the cross-sectional imaging and it's deemed unresectable, but no evidence of metastatic disease, how would you manage that particular patient?
Typically, I would call you or the treating surgeon and confirm. But yes, if you think there's no chance of getting that patient to the OR, which is always our preferred first approach to try and achieve cure, I would instead then try and opt for an ablative approach where when I say ablative, I want to deliver a BED based on alpha beta 10 of around 100 gray to try and get durable local control for that patient. So when we need to do that from external beam approach, I'm usually trying to deliver something like up to 75 gray, so as much of the gross tumor as I safely can over 5 weeks of treatment with concurrent capecitabine. But that does allow, does require a lot of specialized treatment planning with delivery techniques such as breath hold and things like that.
I think you bring a really valuable point, Dr. Lockney, there. I think the patients and the families, as well as the physicians who are taking care of pancreatic cancer patients, it's valuable to obtain a second opinion, even if it's initially deemed unresectable, because what's unresectable in one surgeon's hands may be resectable in a different team. And we see a lot of patients who have been initially categorized as unresectable pancreatic cancer, but they come to us for a second opinion, and I think the emphasis on second opinion cannot be underestimated. Those patients, when we evaluated, we thought that we were able to resect them with or without intraoperative radiation therapy. So I think that's another key point, that always ask for a second opinion in terms of resectability.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.